Our first speaker up is Denise Martins, who is representing QP 3913. Hey, Denise.
Hi, everyone. I realize the megaphone is typically more accessible and awesome because it's louder, but it kind of buzzes, and I find it's actually harder to understand what's being said. So I'm going to speak like this, and I hope that that's okay. And if it's not, someone just shake your head, and I'll...
Don't worry.
Okay. Okay, cool. So, as Mary said, I'm the president of Local 3913 of the Canadian Union of Public Employees. I represent the teaching assistants and sessional lecturers at the university. All of the people that I represent have a very precarious job. They have to apply for a job every 4 months. They don't know if in the next 4 months they're going to have a job. They have some sort of securities as per the collective agreement, but every day we have to fight to make sure that people do have these jobs every 4 months. And every day it's a struggle to make sure that the employer sees these people as people and really it works to make sure that they have a living wage and they're able to maintain themselves because they're not looking out for them and we have to. So what today I would like to talk to you about, one is women, but first I would like to talk to you about precariousness and the fact that a lot of workers, the precariousness in Canada is on the rise. Workers in Canada, more and more workers are in part-time conditions and contract work. A recent study actually showed that in Toronto and Hamilton alone, only 50%, just under 50% of workers, adult workers, have a full-time job and have some sort of benefits and have the ability to sustain themselves and their families. So that's a huge problem, and that's a problem that I face in my union, or we face in my union. So employment in Canada is being redefined to maximize profits for the few and minimize benefits for many. Half of the workers entering the labor market are now in precarious jobs. What this means in the context of Ontario is an organized attack against our mothers, our sisters, and our best friends, and all the women that we know. Women are disproportionately affected by precarious work in Ontario. 7 out of every 10 part-time workers are women. And if, despite these facts, you still choose to believe that somehow we have achieved equality in this country, I would like to bring the date April 9th to your attention. April 9th was a couple weeks ago, and it was very far, far away from New Year's. And April 9 is actually equal pay day here in Ontario. This means that because women earn 30% of what men earn in Ontario, a woman would have to work up until April 9th to earn the same amount that a man earned in 2012. So she would essentially have to work an extra 3 months to make up for that. That's right. Despite this very clear trend, programs that help women deal with this form of institutional discrimination have been continuously cut by the Harper government. We saw a very clear example of this last year when Harper cut the Women's Health Contribution Program, which funded 6 women's health research programs in the country. This was a 16-year-old program that saw an end under Harper's regime. The Tories actually closed 12 of 16 offices of the Status of Women in Canada, eliminated the funding of any women's organization involved in advocacy, and amended the Act on Equitable Compensation to prevent the use of courts to advance pay equity. And despite requests to launch a national, this is another issue, despite the request to launch a national public inquiry into the matter, the Conservative government is still failing to act on the issue of the over 500 Aboriginal women who have disappeared or been murdered in Canada.
Shame.
Something that happened much closer here, Kitchener's Conservative MP, Stephen Woodworth, last year introduced a private member's bill, Motion 312, which sought to re-examine the definition of human being in the criminal code so as to recriminalize abortion. This is disgusting. This should not happen. But we're not just sitting idly by. We're not just letting these things happen. And we know that change is possible, and we're really working towards this. We saw this in the movement with Idle No More. We saw this in the Occupy movement. Our resistance has been loud, clear, and consistent. When Motion 312 of the Kitchener MP to recriminalize abortion came forth, we didn't just sit there. We didn't just send a letter or two. We didn't ask our MPs nicely to talk some sense into the oppressive regime of Stephen Harper. We acted. Women, unions, pro-choice groups, allies, we all teamed together and fought back against the anti-choice motion. Demonstrations were held across the country. We were loud, we were clear, and we made our rage and passion known. And so the bill was defeated.
Yeah.
And that's how we did it. So how we respond to the fact that it takes up until April 9th to be able to have some sort of pay equity or to be able to say that I've earned the same as male counterpart? How do we respond to the attack against our sisters and against our mothers, against our best friends? And how do we respond to a coordinated political attack that leaves us with nowhere to go? I think we all know the answer. I think we're here. We need to wear our emotions on our sleeves. We need to let it be known that we will not take this any longer. We need to be loud. We need to be passionate. And we need to make this rage and this passion known. And we're at a rally. And I think this is very important for us to recognize. And we need to chant. And this is my chance that I'm going to start you off. And there's a
lot of chants.
There's a lot of chants here if you haven't gotten it. But mine's really easy if you want it, someone wants to pass this around. Feel free to start whichever you want. But this is the one I'm starting. And it's very easy. When they say cutbacks, we say fight back. Cutbacks!
Fight back!
Cutbacks!
Fight back!
When they say cutbacks, we say fight back. Cutbacks!
Fight back!
Cutbacks!
Fight back!
When they say cutbacks, we say fight back. Cutback!
Fight back!
Cutback!
Fight back!
When they say cutbacks, we say fight back. Cutbacks!
Fight back!
Cutbacks!
Fight back!
Good.
There we go.
Get some blood pumping.
Our next speaker is Drew Garvey with the Young Communist League.
Thank you very much for inviting me and the YCL to speak today. It's basically my high holy day is tomorrow as a communist, but it's an honor to speak in Guelph too. We haven't had a May Day rally in recent memory. I don't know of a May Day rally. So although we're small here today, I think it's the start of something good, and we can also note that tomorrow in Hamilton and in Toronto there'll be major rallies, and around the world there'll be really major rallies. Special shout out to Peter Miller, who's in Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Him and a million other people will be on the streets of Havana tomorrow in one of the largest May Day marches.
Yeah.
So I was asked to speak a bit about youth and young workers. Well, to summarize, my thesis is the situation's pretty bleak, but let's get more specific than that. In today's, under capitalism and in today's economic crisis, what's the reality? So youth unemployment has hit a 30-year high during the current recession. Unemployment remains double the unemployment average for all workers, so that's around 16-20%. And that's just the young workers that are continuing to look for work. Many more have been they can't find a job for so long that they just don't get counted in that figure of around 20%. A recent study in the UK shows that depression rates among unemployed youth are double that of working youth. The average undergraduate student, this is a university city. The average undergraduate student graduates more than $37,000 in debt. And even before this crisis, capitalist economists were telling us that we're going to be the first generation that won't be receiving the standard of living of our parents, at least since World War II. So we're actually sliding backwards quite considerably, especially under the capitalist crisis. And perhaps the most concerning for young workers is the world that we're inheriting. Obviously, climate change and the inability of our governments to actually come up with a long-term solution. So young people are being attacked, are asked to sell out their futures further in the midst of the economic crisis. Austerity means a ruthless push for environmental deregulation, privatization, reduction in wages and benefits, the targeting of democratic organizations, especially unions. We see that in Ontario through Bill 115 and PUDAC in the sidelines, and a state of permanent war. We see that, in Syria, and looking to expand into the North Korea and Iran right now. We need to beat back Harper's offensive in all these areas. We also need to keep our eyes on Queen's Park, which I think Thursday this week the Kathleen Wynne Liberal government will be unveiling their latest attack on workers in the form of an austerity budget. Maybe call me cynical, but I don't think it'll be exactly in the workers' interest, that budget. So we're being asked to pay for a crisis that we didn't actually create in Ontario. I'm speaking on behalf of the Young Communist League, which sees socialism as the alternative to secure worker, permanent worker and environmental rights. At the same time, we understand that struggles around immediate social progress or reforms lay the foundation for and are a prerequisite for a revolutionary new system. Key to the way forward is young workers getting organized and demanding a future, just as workers did in 1886 in Chicago. They fought and won the 8-hour day, which started the tradition of May Day. An important campaign towards this goal in Ontario right now is the minimum wage campaign, and I was asked to speak a bit about that. This Ontario-based campaign is being coordinated by ACORN, the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, the Toronto and York Region Labour Councils, and more groups are signing on. Also, the YCL Ontario has endorsed it. A bit about the background for it. The fastest growing jobs in Ontario are in the service sector, where minimum wage rates are the highest. Over half of the minimum wage workers are employed by corporations that have over 100 employees. So these aren't mom and pop shops that, you know, supposedly helping small businesses by keeping, by paying poverty wages, you know. Also, top executive compensation at the 50 largest employers of low wage workers, firms like Walmart, Target, and McDonald's, averaged $9.4 million a year. So the average exec at these companies was taking home $9.4 million. Raising the minimum wage will increase the take-home pay of 14% of Ontario workers, many of them young, that make at or around minimum wage. That's 750,000 people in the province of Ontario. It'll also have a boosting effect on all wages in the province. This is also a campaign for equality, as minimum wage jobs are also gendered and racialized. As Denise mentioned, a lot of this precarious work is minimum wage. So the demands of the campaign believes that the minimum wage should be a wage that brings workers and their families above the poverty line and should be adjusted to reflect the cost of living based on the following principles. So number one, that the wage should bring families and workers out of poverty, the minimum wage should be set at 10% above the poverty line using the low income measure, which is ostensibly what the minimum wage is supposed to do, right? I mean, even the government admits that. Otherwise, we'd be back in the mines making 12 cents an hour. The minimum wage should be calculated based on a 35-hour work week. Most minimum wage workers don't actually work a 40-hour week, right? So why are we calculating minimum wage based on a 40-hour work week? So a 35 would be a step in the right direction. And the minimum wage should be updated every year with the cost of living. I mean, every year that there is no minimum wage increase is actually a cut in 14% of the population's salary, basically. So we haven't had a minimum wage increase for at least a couple years now. There have already been actions in 15 different cities in Ontario, and we'll be helping to build a campaign here in Guelph this summer. If you'd like to get involved, we're hoping to get as many organizations as possible and unions on board to form a local committee. The YCL sees it as necessary to build and unite struggles like these into a force that is able to put forward a people's agenda. So yes, we're fighting austerity, but we're also putting forward our own agenda. We see this in the Occupy movement, the Quebec student strike, and most recently in Idle No More, that resistance is growing. So we need to escalate and unite these movements. Chicago showed us the way. That's the slogan of the World Federation of Trade Unions for May Day this year. So Chicago being referenced to the first May Day in 1886. To us, this means mass mobilization is the solution and the way forward, and unity is our greatest weapon. So after all, they've got the dollars, but we have the people. Maybe not at this rally, maybe next year. But in Toronto tomorrow, in Hamilton, around the world, it's like we are the vast majority. Thank you. My name is Drew Garvey. I'm here today on behalf of the Young Communist League.
My name is Denise Martins, and I'm here today on behalf of Local 3913 of QP.
A lot of these issues that are coming up are, for some people, really difficult to even envision and understand because they're so big and they're so overwhelming. So how do you see things playing out on a personal level?
Well, I think more and more people are realizing that the status quo is getting worse. So, I mean, as conditions change, like with the economic crisis and with austerity, and with just the workforce, the flexibility of the labor market, they call it, but it really means low wage, precarious part-time work for a lot of people who are unemployment. It happens on a case-by-case basis, I guess, individual to individual, but they start seeing that there are serious problems with the status quo and that things aren't static. We're actually sliding backwards. And then they start asking questions. Like, I think you saw this with the Occupy movement. A lot of people, you know, it was kind of the simplistic idea of the 99% versus the 1%. But still, I mean, that's a big step forward in terms of, collective consciousness in Canada. Like, that really resonated with people. And I think, it'll happen on a case-by-case basis, but it's also, you know, these movements, once they start, like a bit of a spark really brings things forward.
And I guess what you're asking is sort of like how what we see day to day like fits within this broader. It's hard. You see, day to day, it's my union, right? Like, I'm representing my members, and as I said, it's very precarious situations. People that are applying for jobs every 4 months, they don't know where they're going. As a student, it's paying for tuition fees, and seeing that rise every year and getting involved in the movement to change that, and beginning to see this as something more than just, oh, me, my tuition fees, me, my job, oh, why did I get fired, or why is this going on, or why aren't I getting this job? And these questions become a broader thing, and it becomes about capitalism. It's very, I don't know, sometimes you feel really small in this entire process and you feel insignificant, but it's moments like these and rallies like this that make you, and rallies like the May Day rally in Toronto and Hamilton, that make you realize that everyone's feeling this way. Everyone's seeing this debt problem, and everyone's seeing this precariousness problem, and the things that I see day to day within my job as president of 3913, or within my just day to day life, are global problems, and it's not just my problem.
Awesome. One more question. Could you both speak to what you see as the moment that got you involved in what you're involved in now, the issues that you're passionate about that have brought you to here in May Day?
Life story. Go.
I guess I grew up during the 1990s, so I was kind of my first, you know, looking at the political world understanding where I kind of stood was with the Mike Harris government, and my parents and my teachers. My parents worked in the healthcare sector, and that was being really cut back and privatized and reshaped by the Harris Tories. And then in school, the teachers would rail against the Harris Tories there because they were doing all kinds of terrible things to education. So that was kind of the first thing. And then when I was in high school, I guess it was the invasion of Iraq. So with a bit of reading and watching what was going on the TV, you know, it was very clear that that war, and for me at least, that's. I got involved in the peace movement first, I guess. So that was the understanding that how war was tied to the economy and stuff like that. And then through university, I've been involved in the student movement. And then May Day. May Day, I guess I read about it in high school and stuff, but it wasn't until 2006, I think, where there was like, in North America, at least. I mean, May Day is celebrated all over the world in large numbers, but in North America, it's largely, I mean, if you ask the average person on the street, they probably wouldn't know what May Day was. It wasn't until 2006 in the United States when millions of non-status workers, immigrant workers, used May Day to go on strike, and that kind of like really revitalized the May Day movement. And so since 2006, I've been attending May Day rallies as part of the rejuvenated May Day movement.
Life story. Here we go. My dad was a union man. He was a steward, I guess. That's what you would call him. Yes, a steward in his union. And this was in Argentina. And then he felt imprisoned during, like, the fascist regime of Argentina. And so they were political refugees to Canada. So, like, I've always sort of been around this, analysis of labor in my household. But I really didn't, I guess, get involved until I came to university, and then during the Honduras coup, I really got involved with Drew and sort of fighting that and bring awareness to our campus about it. Then I was involved with the student union. I was an executive in the student union for a year. And then one thing led to another, and I became a TA, a teaching assistant, and I ran to be the president of my union, and I'm here now. But in terms of, like, how I came to feel this and be angry about it, it's just, like, how could you not when you're living and you're a student and you happen to have a TA-ship, if you're lucky, and you know, like, my roommate is unemployed and she's just, like, you see her struggling every day, and, like, how could you not act to this?
Hello. thank you all for listening to this May Day special from 12 to 2 p.m., today on 93.3 FM CFRU. We've been airing recordings that we're taking at Guelph's first May Day rally, which was held yesterday at 5:30 p.m. in front of Guelph City Hall on Carden Street in downtown Guelph. And that last interview we just played was with Denise Martins, president of QP3913, And she was also one of the rally's organizers, and Drew Garvey, a longtime organizer with the Young Communist League in Guelph. In the past half hour, we also heard from a couple more organizers of the rally, Sarah Scanlon, a current staff with OPER Guelph, and myself, Mary Carl Giao, an organizer with Fuerza Puerza, a Guelph-based migrant worker advocacy collective. I now need to play some announcements and promos. So stay tuned, everyone, to CFRU 93.3 FM. We have some excellent coverage of the first May Day rally in Guelph still to come. There are many excellent marches and festivities. A lot of them longstanding in a city near us or you, any listeners, such as the May Day of Action in Toronto that's happening today. You can, you know, Google the May Day of Action, No One is Legal, to find out more details about what's going on throughout the day. More specifically, the website address is toronto.nooneisillegal.org. There's also the mayworks.ca site. So there's a Mayworks Festival going on in Toronto as well, and that's happening from May 1st to May 15th of this year. And it's a festival of working, dedicated to working people and the arts. That's the 28th annual Mayworks Festival that's taking place. And also there's a May Day March in Hamilton. I'm going to have to switch to the promos right now, but please stay tuned.